Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the evil Mac Observer. Today's episode is a harrowing tale of what if and what might have been.
Welcome to the Apple Context Machine's House of Horrors. It's time for our annual show. Oops, I mean our annual Halloween special. Apologies. Yes, we haven't been getting out of the crypt much. Our evil doctor told us to get more exercise if we're going to be doing much laughing.
Silence, fool! They don't need to know all that.
Right. Last year, we talked about the five spookiest moments in Apple's history. Look it up. It's on the interwebs. Or they could check out the show notes. The evil show notes. Right. The evil show notes. But this year, we have an even more frightening show for you.
Frightening!
This year, we will turn our crypt into a trans... A trans...
Look, it's simple. It's a quantum trans-dimensional pen modification visualizer.
Right. What he said. If I've told you once, I've told you a thousand times, Brian.
I know, but...
If you paid attention during the briefing, you'd have learned it by now.
Yes, yes, yes. Can we get on with it now?
If you wish.
I do. So, where was I? Right. The trans...
Through the quantum trans-dimensional pen modification visualizer.
Through the doohickey, we shall take you to a terrifying land where Apple never existed. That's right. We shall show you what it would be like if... Apple had never been born, and this time, Clarence won't be there to give us a happy ending. To the doohickey!
And then... The great pumpkin drew back his arm, the flames billowing from the end.
What the?
Jeff, oh my god.
Dude, you look like you just saw a ghost.
I don't know, it was, I wish it had been a ghost.
What the hell, what did you see?
Outside, I was just outside and I swear, Jeff, everything is different.
What do you mean everything is different?
Wait a minute. Where's your Mac?
My Air? It's right here. What the hell is wrong with you?
Is my tower? There it is.
Your Mac Pro? Dude, it's right there. What the hell is wrong with you?
Outside. They say there's no devil, Jeff. But there is. Outside. I saw it.
Well, what devil, Brian? Are you off of your meds?
Jeff, outside. Everything has changed. If I didn't know better, I'd say that Apple had never existed.
What do you mean?
I was just at Starbucks, and people were sitting around reading newspapers, and there were a couple of... I swear to you, there were a couple of terminals along the wall.
What do you mean, terminals? Like someplace to plug in their laptops?
No, there were no laptops, just a couple of old... terminals, you know, like for a mainframe or something, and they were coin operated.
What?
I came running over and there were Pepsi signs everywhere.
Pepsi?
Yeah, Pepsi, like it was a big deal or something.
That's just crazy talk.
And then I asked someone if I could borrow their phone, you know, to call you. And this dude whips out a Motorola Razr and tells me to be careful with it because he just got it.
Wait, a Razr? Who gives a crap about a flip phone?
That's just it. It was like Apple had never existed to show the world what taste is.
But my Mac is right here. And here's my iPhone.
I know. Maybe TMO Towers is immune to this alternate timeline.
Wait. Did you say alternate timeline? Do you think this has something to do with the quantum transdimensional panmortification visualizer Dave, John, and Mackie Gap Jim have been working on down in the basement?
Alrighty. Well, that's our most elaborate intro yet, eh, Jeff?
I think so. And you know, considering our incredible production budget, well, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, we hope you enjoyed the outro. We had a lot of fun putting it together. But now, of course, we actually have to record a show to wrap our intro around.
Yeah, it'd be real easy right now just to say, okay, thanks for listening this week. See you later. And pop in the outro and we're done.
Yep.
Yet we can't do that.
Nope, we can't. We can't. So, but we did think it would be interesting to talk about this month what it would have been like without Apple. I mean, you know, obviously this has added meaning because Steve passed away this month.
True. Yeah.
But you know, it's a lot of Apple is a company that really has changed the world repeatedly, and there's a lot of stuff that we all take for granted that it just things wouldn't be this way, and for the most part, my personal feeling is that they would be for the worse.
I think we're probably on the same page there. I can't imagine where we would be, although I'm going to be trying for a little while today. if Apple hadn't happened.
Yeah. And so we think that qualifies as a scary, spooky show, but that's because we roll that way or something.
Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah. All right, so let's start at the very top. Let's go back to the mid-70s.
Right, that's when computers were big iron, and there was this interesting new machine called the Altair.
The Altair, which basically had lights that blinked on and off.
Yeah, little switches on the front, mm-hmm. and it shipped to you with instructions on how to build it.
Right, it came as a kit form, and Bill Gates and Paul Allen had developed a form of BASIC while at the same time for the Altair, right? Mm-hmm. Because there was no easy-to-use programming language. You actually had to program it with switches.
Right, and your code was gone when you shut the computer off, and there's no display.
And so Bill and Paul invented a form of BASIC that they wanted to license out to the folks at Altair. And at the same time that this was going on, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, mainly Steve Wozniak on the building side, and by mainly I mean entirely Steve Wozniak on the building side, were working on a project that they ended up calling the Apple One.
Right, that they took to their homebrew computer club, and everyone flipped out because it was so amazingly cool.
And you know, this was a device that would actually work with a TV as a monitor, and you know, it was still came in kit form. Although I guess they sold some that were completed to the Byte Shop.
Sure,
but it was envisioned as a kit, so you know, whatever that's worth. And even when the ones they built for the Byte Shop were built as complete motherboards, not with cases or anything like that.
Right. So then people had to go...
No power supply.
Right. And so people had to build their own case if they wanted one. which is why a lot of photos you see of the original Apple One, it's a computer in a wood box.
In a wooden box, yeah. So what if that hadn't happened? What would have, you know, I think it's easy for us today, especially if you're young. I say euphemistically. it's easy to think that, well, someone would have done it. You know, someone would have brought a real personal computer to market. But there was a lot of, you know, especially, so most of the history in Walter Isaacson's book, Steve Jobs, mm-hmm. most of the basic history, actually, I'll be arrogant, all of the basic history in the book is stuff that I personally already knew. It's the details that he fills in
sure.
that, to me, have been just fascinating when reading it. I'm only about halfway through it right now. But, you know, the details, the some of the specific conversations, some of the individual people and their, you know, all the stuff that people talked to Isaacson about that maybe, you know, where no one had talked about it. That's been all the fascinating new stuff to me. And his recreation of how the Apple One came to be and how the company Apple Incorporated in it, or Apple Computer Incorporated ended up forming, all of that stuff has been really, really interesting because a lot of the details were filled in. And there was a lot of stuff that had to come together at the right time in the right place with the right people and the right circumstances for the Apple One to be created, let alone Apple Incorporated and the Apple II.
Right. And if those things hadn't come together as they did, I think the technology landscape of today would be dramatically different.
Dramatically different. I think that we would have gone years and years before we would have had what we think of today as a personal computer entering the market.
Yeah, and I don't think it would have met with our expectations of what a personal computer should be, because those companies that were making computers back in the 60s and 70s were not thinking of computing technology the way that Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak did.
Right.
Computing technology was a business tool and a science tool.
Right.
And as HP said, when the Steves pitched the Apple back to them, why would someone want a computer in their home?
Right. Right. There are so many moments, you know, including stuff that the old IBM phrase, where when they agreed to license DOS instead of buy it, they said everyone knows the profits are in the hardware.
Right.
Which, ironically, is the case again today.
And when they said that all those years ago, that was true, but they didn't realize that they were going to be wrong very, very quickly.
Right. And our point is that there were lots of people in positions of power within the technology world for whom concepts like who would want a computer in their home was not just the prevailing wisdom, it was the wisdom. What would you do with a computer at your home at that time? And the answer is, you know, when it comes to, you know, having a microcomputer or even a mini computer, not much. I mean, there wouldn't be anything for you to do, right? You know, what are you going to do? You're going to add some numbers?
It would be the type of device that a specialist would have, and I'm using the term specialist very broadly, because, you know, there are all different kinds of ways someone could be a specialist in a field and at that point have found a need for a computer, but it wouldn't have been a mainstream thing. A hobbyists would have had them. That's where the Altair was going, for at least for a lot of people.
Sure, some like hardcore amateur astronomer. I mean, the point is that, you know, software for normal folks didn't exist in any way whatsoever.
And Yeah.
There was no easy way to use a computer. As a matter of fact, the Apple II was designed from the get-go to work with a display, and to have a little disk drive, the 5 1/4, was it 5 1/4, right? 3 1/2, 5 1/4.
Yes.
Yeah, 5 1/4 inch floppy disk.
Well, actually, even earlier, cassette tape. Because they started with cassette tapes, and
the Apple II did.
Yeah,
you sure about that?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. I remember
I had a TI-99/4A with a cassette deck.
Yeah. See, you were rocking. I remember friends having an Apple II and a cassette deck, but the floppy drive was available very early on, and I would have to assume the reason some people went with cassettes instead of floppies might have had something to do with price at the time, or they already had the cassette players, and so they just used that because they had it.
Yeah, that might be.
I don't know.
I honestly won't pretend to be an expert in exactly what Apple released with, but if I remember correctly from Steve Jobs, I thought that Wozniak had designed it to work with the floppy drive.
Yes,
out of the gate.
Yes.
And anyway, the point is that these were firsts. You know, Steve Wozniak was a bloody engineering genius. The stuff that he did with the Apple I and the Apple II.
Oh yeah.
And you know, again, you know, a company like Commodore was already starting to sort of come into being. Of course, the Altair company came into being. There were all the large big iron companies like IBM and Wang, and was HP doing big iron already?
I don't think HP was doing big iron at that time.
I don't think they were.
Yeah, I think at that point HP might have still been known more for their scientific research equipment,
their instruments and their calculators.
Yeah.
They might have been doing some big iron stuff. So clearly we don't know.
But the point is
no one was working on what Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak wanted to do, which was to bring computing to the people.
Right.
And make some money at it.
So, all right. So do you want to hear my theory on where a lot of these companies would be today?
Yes.
All right. So my feeling is that after the Altair, without Apple, that Microsoft would have continued as a small company making custom applications and operating systems for specialized computer equipment. And since we wouldn't have the personal computer growing, the whole thing with Microsoft getting into its own DOS that ultimately got licensed out to IBM, I don't think that would have happened. And so I think
let's do that history right, because
they bought
Microsoft sold DOS to IBM before they had it.
That's true.
And then they went and bought it and finished it.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
Yeah, they bought was it Dr. DOS? I can't remember.
Something like that.
But yeah, so you're absolutely right. And so I think that purchase wouldn't have happened, and I think Microsoft would have been
IBM wouldn't have entered the PC business.
Exactly. Right.
Without having seen that there was a market for personal computers that Apple was selling and then some other companies including Commodore was selling to people and businesses.
Right. And so I think that would have left Microsoft as a small player in the technology world.
Right. Oh, yeah, very. And Microsoft's revenues at first were coming from Apple to software, like the BASIC, their version of BASIC for the Apple II was really, really good.
Yes.
And very popular.
They made a CPM board for the Apple II.
Right. And they made
it was fantastic.
Multiplan was the Apple II. It was their spreadsheet. It was one of the first spreadsheet applications.
Yep. And that was all good stuff.
Right. And those things happened because Apple was selling computers to people.
Right.
And like I said, it would have eventually come. But there was a lot of development in what we now know of as the personal computer industry that happened because Apple got the industry rolling. In other words, you know, we can't look and say that that everything that may let's look at a, you know, a 1985 computer, personal computer of some sort, and we can't just say that the things that went into that 1985 commercial computer would have existed anyway, so someone else would have been able to put it together, because if Apple hadn't have been around to start everything off, a lot of that development wouldn't have taken place. A lot of those advances wouldn't have taken place.
Right. Now, it's easy to say some other people probably would have come up with the same ideas that Jobs and Wozniak came up with, and I believe that's very true. I think the difference is that there was a special drive that Steve Jobs had, and because of that, he was able to continue pushing so that they could take this impossible idea and make it possible. I think that the same ideas put together by other people would have remained in the hobbyist realm.
Well, you know, I don't know that the same ideas would have happened. Certainly not in the same organic way. I mean, for instance, maybe we would have gone to the notion of thin clients.
I think that's probably exactly where we would have eventually gone.
Our little crack in the setup about there being terminals in Starbucks for people to, you know, log in and, you know, I don't know, maybe they're checking their electronic mail. their D-mail, their digital mail, or something like that, with their coin-operated terminals. I mean, you know, that could have ended up being the way that computing was brought to the masses, in a way that kept the power concentrated into the hands of the big iron owners.
I think that's very likely.
It certainly could have happened that way. It certainly could have happened. You know, it's the ripples from the creation of the Apple II in particular, and the formation of Apple Computer Inc., the ripples are almost too complex and wide and huge and massive to truly be able to look at how the world might have been otherwise.
But and yet here we are.
And yet here we are, yeah.
And doing it with such an awesome setup, too. So there's exactly. That.
Exactly. And, you know, so cutting ahead, I mean, there would have been no Dell. There would have been no Compaq. There would have been Commodore was, like I said, was already in the pro. You know, maybe Commodore would have ended up doing something really cool. Maybe Atari would have ended up being in the computer business, because, you know, we're not saying what if Steve Jobs had never been around. We're saying what if Apple hadn't been around.
Right.
Well, Steve was working at Atari. You know, maybe. You know, maybe Atari would have ended up trying to. Well, of course, Steve didn't invent the damn thing. He only figured out how he wanted to package it and market it and sell it.
Right, and Wozniak probably would have stayed with Hewlett Packard, where he would have incredible things, which would have made the technology for the thin client devices that we would have in our homes or coffee shops much cooler. Or at least much more efficient.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we would have had the personal computer as we do today.
Yeah, we definitely would not have.
Yeah, and I like to think Amiga might have been the company to give us the personal computer. But the problem is we needed to have Steve Jobs and his team go to Xerox's Park Center and look at the experimental graphic interface things that Xerox was doing.
Right. And would the folks at the park have would they have been working on that sort of technology? If Apple hadn't shown that personal computers could be made and sold at a profit?
I'm going to say yes. And that's because I'm assuming Xerox wasn't working on it for the personal computer. They were working on it for the Reaper graphics technologies that they had.
Well, that's true.
And I mean, and Xerox has always been an industry leader in the technologies for Reaper graphics. So coming up with new ways to use that technology and to make it more efficient in the print and publishing industry totally makes sense. And I have a feeling that the whole graphic interface was just an idea for ways to make that more efficient. And then ultimately they were thinking, meh, which is why they were okay letting the Apple people come in, showing it to them, and then saying, yeah, go ahead and run with it. Because I don't think they actually saw the value in it. They saw it more as an intellectual adventure.
It's the people back east. It's the people at Xerox Incorporated.
Sure.
That didn't see the value in what the Park people were doing. And they wanted the opportunity to invest in Apple, which is why they let Steve come in. The people that were actually at the Park, the woman, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but the woman who was specifically in charge of that particular project was outraged that Xerox was going to basically give away the crown jewels.
Sure, and rightly so. And I have a feeling that had they not done that, like if Apple hadn't been around, there wouldn't have been anyone else to come in, and eventually she would have been outraged when Xerox out east just kind of pulled the plug on the funding and said, yeah, we're going to work on other things.
All right, so let's cut ahead to, I think it was 1981 when IBM introduced a PC.
Mm-hmm.
And let's pretend that they weren't doing that only because Apple had basically started this industry. Let's pretend that they would have done the PC anyway.
Okay.
Okay, so they licensed DOS.
I don't think they would have.
But let's pretend.
Okay, let's pretend. And then I'll give you my version of what I think would have happened. So, okay.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think that IBM would have sought to enter the market with a personal computer had Apple not made a ton of money.
Right. I'm saying is I have an alternate timeline, since we're doing alternate timelines, for the same scenario where IBM does get into the PC thing. So please continue.
All right, so they introduced it in 81 anyway. Microsoft, for whatever reason, is still in place and still has the audacity to sell an operating system they don't have, and they're still able to find it. And then they, you know, so DOS is born, and PCs hit the market probably at twice the price that they actually did come out at, and personal computers are born. So now, without Apple, without Jeff Raskin's having seen what was going on at the Park and him effectively tricking Steve into going and checking out what was at the Park, and Steve deciding that, so the, you know, the Lisa being born, and then Steve deciding that he wants to outlease the Lisa, and you know, without all that happening, how long are we sitting with DOS as the effectively the only way to interact with computers? That, you know, that sort of Unix-y command line thing.
I'm thinking that would have lasted for an exceptionally long time. I think we would have been command line. Let's see, that was at the beginning of the 80s. I think we would have gone at least another 10 years before we had a graphic interface, but it would not have been like what we have today. I think it would have been more of a like an object thing where you get to see buttons and boxes sort of thing.
Right. If you look at how long it took Microsoft to make Windows usable, let alone not suck.
And that's even after being able to rip it off from Mac OS.
Right. Windows 1, I think, was introduced in 85. Windows 3 shipped in 1990. Windows 3 was the first really usable version of Windows, in my opinion, and 3.5 actually became quite usable. And then, of course, Windows 95 coming out in 1995. You know, that's 5 years to get to a usable point where Windows was a usable operating system, and that's with Apple having shown the way.
Right.
So how long would it have taken? You know, maybe Microsoft would have just instead ripped off the Amiga, but you know, I actually don't know enough about Amiga's early beginnings to know how much they were influenced by the Mac.
I think that everyone that was doing graphic interface work back then was influenced by Apple.
That's what I think, too. I'm actually, while you're talking, I'm going to, why don't you tell us your alternate timeline.
Okay, so here's my alternate timeline. All right, so we hit 1981, as you suggested, and IBM comes out with their own personal computer, even though Apple hasn't done anything. What I think they do is come out with a personal computer that is more of the thin terminal sort of device, where you get this computing device that's capable of handling some tasks on its own, but it's sort of like cable television where you pay a monthly fee, and so you're subscribing to the IBM servers. And so your real horsepower is coming from there. You're paying for that service. You're also, just like you can do with cable TV today, where you buy a package of channels, mm-hmm. you would do the same thing with applications. So there would be application groups that you could buy or get the whole premium package that gives you access to every application that they have. And so your computer terminal in your home isn't so much an autonomous controlled by you device. It's a gateway into the subscription services that IBM offers. Hmm. And in that scenario, if Microsoft were to get involved, they would be offering a middle layer product, and they would still end up being in the background as opposed to becoming a big name player, because it's their operating system that's actually driving all these computers.
That is a very interesting theory.
And kind of sad one, if you...
It is certainly sad, but I kind of like it. So, our good friends at Wikipedia say that the Amiga 500 was released in 87, but that was not the first Amiga. Saying that the first one was released in 1985, but I don't really know much about what it was actually capable of. And that would have been a year after the Mac was released in the first place. Of course, everyone knew, and the Lisa was released in 83. It was when the Lisa shipped. Yeah. So yeah, I think we can go ahead and say that Apple's popularization, successful popularization of the graphic user interface concept that was first developed at the Xerox PARC certainly is what helped spread it.
Sure.
In the wider world.
Sure. And then going back a little farther, the Apple II coming out opened the doors so that companies like Amiga could say, yeah, we can do personal computers. And then IBM said, yes, we can do personal computers.
Yep. All right. So now let's skip ahead to another section. I mean, so to summarize that, as I go backwards and forwards, it would have been, I think, at least a decade before, without some other freak set of coincidences and freaky people who are super, super visionary to do what Jobs and Wozniak did starting in 1975 and 76, it would have been at least 10 years before the establishment computer industry got around to doing what Apple did. And if they had done so, it would have looked very different.
Yes, I agree.
All right. So we're agreed there. So now let's cut ahead to some other things. Without Apple, we don't get Next.
No, we don't, because Apple has to exist so that Steve Jobs can be run out of the company.
Right, and yet have enough money to start his own company.
Right.
And, of course, all the people that started Next with him, that he started Next with, I should say, were all Apple veterans.
Right. So he takes his Apple team, he starts this new computer company called Next, and he uses Unix as the underlying foundation for the computers, and then builds this graphic interface on top of it, and kind of out Apple's Apple as far as interfaces go.
Right, to prove that they were wrong to chase him out.
Right.
So without all that happening, Next doesn't happen. And if Next doesn't happen,
We don't have a little thing called the internet, at least not as we know it today.
That's true, because Tim, is it Berners-Lee or Lee Berners? I always mix that up.
Berners-Lee.
Berners-Lee, thank you. Because Tim Berners-Lee used a Next Cube as the launching point for what eventually became the World Wide Web, the internet as we have it today.
Yeah. And yes, things like the ARPANET existed, and things like the ARPANET existed before or independent of, I think, the personal computer revolution.
Yes, but that was really a government and science network.
Right, and I think that networking like that, worldwide networking, would have stayed the realm of huge corporations, the military, and governments.
I agree.
And we also have no Pixar, because Pixar was purchased with proceeds, if you'll pardon my alliteration, from Steve's selling his Apple stock.
That's true. That's true. Steve bought Pixar from George Lucas. Excuse me. And then he took that from a kind of a basic sci-fi. Wow, I hate when I forget words. Special effects type of shop and animation shop. And
it was,
then
it was a computer company. He was actually buying, in his mind, he was buying a computer software and hardware company.
Sure, but that's not what George Lucas was seeing it as. Which is okay, because they had different visions, and clearly
that,
because
that is
because now we have hand shooting first.
Yeah, but it was the computer division of Lucasfilms,
right?
So they made their own computer and their own software to do special effects with,
right? And so then Steve took that and was able to sculpt that into an incredibly powerful and successful computer animation company.
Right, although I'd give credit more to Ed Catmull and John Lasseter, but Steve definitely seemed to buy into the vision that John Lasseter had of making great animation. It was that whole art and technology intersection thing that Steve obsessed over.
Right. Okay. So now let's assume that Steve hadn't been around to shell out the cash for Pixar. And we know George really had to sell Pixar because he was using the money for that to pay
his ex-wife.
So someone else buys it. And it's another company. It might have been a film company. It might have been just some technology company. They wouldn't have looked at the company in the same way. They wouldn't have listened to people like Lasseter in the same way. And I don't think Pixar ever would have become a feature film computer animation company.
No, because Steve bought the company for, I'm going to try to remember the details, $5 million, plus he agreed to put another $5 million into, so Lucas got $5 million and Steve agreed to put another $5 million into the company. For capitalization.
Right. So he drops $10 million on this company.
And ends up dropping another $40 million before Toy Story is released.
And that shows you how much he believed in the company and the vision.
$50 million of his own bucks. So, you know, whomever Lucas, and this is of course ignoring the reality that while the computers that the division of Lucasfilm that became Pixar was making were not personal computers. They were very specifically not personal computers.
Right.
But still, a lot of what they were doing was certainly benefiting from the advances in computers and the development of microprocessors and graphics processing units that were related to the explosion of the personal computer industry. So we're sort of ignoring the fact that it's not likely that that division would have existed in the form that it did when Steve bought it to begin with.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, so we're ignoring that.
We're just ignoring that. We're just talking about the fact that Steve didn't buy it because he didn't have the money, and he wasn't there to appreciate the gift that John Lasseter is to the world.
Sounds good to me. And sad at the same time, but yeah, okay. So we don't get Pixar then.
Yeah, wow. we still have Disney, possibly under Eisner, putting out crappy animation.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to go so far as to say Disney would no longer be doing animation.
That's probably the case. They were almost at that point anyway. And then, of course, DreamWorks. DreamWorks was founded by Paul Allen, Spielberg, and Katzenberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Yes. And now that, I think DreamWorks still could have happened. It's DreamWorks Animation that wouldn't have happened.
Well, DreamWorks could have... where's Paul Allen getting his money without Microsoft having become a big deal?
Oh, crap. I forgot about that part.
Yeah.
Man, alternate timelines. Oh, what a pain in the ass.
Yeah, no joke. So...
Yeah, quantum mechanics. It's hard.
Plus, and then what you were talking about... Exactly. You know, because we know quantum mechanics.
Well, yeah.
But you're also right that the DreamWorks animation stuff came about absolutely because of the success of Pixar. So you know, that wouldn't have happened either, as you were trying to say earlier.
Yep. So that would have meant no Kung Fu Panda.
No. All right. Well, curse you, Steve Jobs and Apple. And if you like Shrek, I'm sorry.
You know, the original Shrek was kind of fun. After it's that...
Lowest common denominator poop jokes, man. You know, I watch anything by DreamWorks, and all I can hear is lowest common denominator poop jokes. And it just makes me tense.
It just occurred to me, you weren't drunk when you saw Shrek.
This is true.
So that totally makes sense. Fair enough.
That's funny. That is funny. Alrighty. So... We've got no Pixar. We've got no internet. We have no Quake, as we all know. Quake was originally written on an Xbox, and it took something with the power of Next, the Next Cube, to...
Wait, did you say it was written on an Xbox?
Next.
Oh, Xbox. Next box. Okay. Sorry. My bad.
Yeah, so the it took the power of the Next Cube to be able to do what John Carmack wanted to do with his 3D rendering game. And, you know, I wonder if... This is interesting, Jeff. I wonder if what we think of as personal computers today might not have grown out of the console market.
It could have, but...
Isn't that interesting?
That would be interesting, yeah. But I think it would have been a more focused entertainment-type market if it had grown that way, because people would have the preconceived notion of you're playing video games.
Yeah, and it would have been all through your, you know, your living room TV set.
Right. So the console market could have still happened. It wouldn't be like...
No, the console... Yeah, the console market Atari pre-exists Apple.
Right. But, okay. But the sophisticated console market, that still could have happened.
That likely would have happened. As a matter, you know, and Atari might still... Bushnell might not have... you know, might have risen to become some kind of massive technology titan.
Can you imagine if we were still buying Atari consoles and those square plastic cartridges to pop into them?
Yeah, well, they'd probably be different cartridges at this point.
Oh, of course, but they would.
You know, if we were recording this, but not that we'd have podcasts without Apple, but if we were recording this podcast on our Ataris. Yeah, yeah. There would, of course, the competition would have come into you know, the Nintendo still would have come into existence.
Of course.
You know, Sony probably would have eventually entered the market just like they did with the PlayStation.
Right.
I mean, the that's a really interesting idea. If you remove the power of personal computers and the focus that personal computers took from people's attention and from you know, entertainment budgets, from their time budgets, and maybe consoles would have evolved to provide some of the things like certainly messaging and maybe even you know, writing letters, word processing, those kinds of things might have all come out of consoles. That's really interesting.
Yeah, actually, it is.
We shall not know. We shall not know. And then, of course, how about all the people that ended up doing big things after they left Apple?
We wouldn't have that at all. Well, it would. It certainly
some of them may have done big things elsewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Some of the people that left Apple and went on to make interesting companies doing cool things in the technology industry, they probably would have been doing those something along those lines, even though it wouldn't have been quite as cool, through companies like Atari and Amiga and, mm-hmm. you know, potentially even Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe like Trip Hopkins formed Electronic Arts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, giant in gaming as we know it today. Of course, as our little joke during our skit at the beginning, John Scully may have stayed at Pepsi where he belonged, and, you know, maybe Pepsi would have stayed bigger than Coke as opposed to overtaking Coke briefly only to let Coke take back over.
Right.
We've got, Dale Yoakam ended up doing a bunch of big things at Bohr. Wow, what's the name of that company?
Borland,
yes. Of course, Borland in itself wouldn't have existed because there wouldn't have been a personal computer market.
That means we wouldn't have had Broderbund.
We wouldn't have had Broderbund. We wouldn't have had, what's the company that ended up, that arose out of Myst?
Cyan,
right. They wouldn't have existed.
And Myst was an awesome game.
Yeah, and there are a bunch of Apple people that if we'd actually looked it up ahead of time, we could probably give you a big list of all the Apple people that have done things. Of course, the reality is that you know, and this is definitely one of those things that I'm getting out of Walter Isaacson's Steve Jobs biography. A lot of the people that we think of as being, you know, great people who accomplished something amazing at Apple only did so because Steve was there to constantly tell them they were idiots and everything they were doing was poop.
Yeah.
Driving them to constantly do things that they didn't think they could do.
Yep, good point. Oh, did you see Independence Day?
I did.
The aliens would have won.
That's true. The aliens would have won. Can't have that.
No.
Well, and so special effects, movie special effects have grown over the years. What was the SGI? Is that right? SGI was the high-end graphics computer. The things that Hollywood has done digitally would still be, you know, probably in their infancy at this point.
That's true. A lot of that stuff would still probably be practical effects.
Yeah. No. Lord of the Rings would not have gotten made. Of course, you know, there are all kinds of movies where that may actually be a benefit that they weren't made. But I mean, what's his face? Michael Bay and his, you know, huge big explosion movies and stuff.
He would have had to focus more on the boobs.
Exactly. Again, there are just so many repercussions that if Apple didn't exist, our world would be a much different place.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we haven't even, of course, got to phones. You know, we'd still think that the Razor was cool. The Razor was cool. In its day, the Razor was freaking awesome.
I had a Razor in my pocket when Steve Jobs stood on stage and showed us the original iPhone.
Mm-hmm. So did I, actually. I did, too.
Yeah. And of my cell phones up until I got the original iPhone, that was actually the favorite cell phone I ever had.
It was absolutely my favorite cell phone, too, and the interface sucked.
It did. It was total crap.
It was the hardware and the buttons and the, you know, the tactile.
Yes. It was durable. It was tactile. It was
slim.
It was slim. Yes. It was so easy to use. As long as all I needed to do was make a call.
Right. Had such a nice, satisfying snick when you closed it.
Yes. I mean, catching the edge of the lid with your thumb and having it just pop open.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that would still be, and of course this is again ignoring the fact that a lot of the industrial design, a lot of the shrinkage of components that you know went into the cell phone industry's own evolution were byproducts and benefited from a lot of the advances that were going on in personal computers.
True.
That's ignoring that. But the point is that we most certainly would not be in the age of the smartphone today without Apple.
No, I really don't think we would be at all. Because if people didn't have a personal computer and want to have the kind of access to information that you get from a personal computer, there wouldn't have been a drive to move into taking high-powered computing into your pocket.
That's right. That's absolutely the case. And you know, we think of Steve Jobs and Apple. We think of Steve Jobs from what seemed like his drive to make insanely great computers, right?
Sure.
Well, the very first thing he wanted to do was make a slot. This is not even true. Before he wanted to do Apple with Steve Wozniak, he tried to talk Ron Wayne into starting up a new company to make slot machines. So, you know, Steve Jobs, casino mogul.
Now, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, it would be interesting because think about how awesome slot machines would be.
I'd probably spend time in Cripple Creek and Blackhawk.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah.
It would be cool to lose money. It'd be like, oh my God, I'm losing money hand over fist. But this is so cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Productivity may be at an all-time low. That's a curious thought. But I think it's fair to say that no company has had the kinds of repercussions on our daily lives that Apple has. Even if you're not an Apple user, even if you're not an Apple fan, even if, you know, there's nothing that certainly the industrial world, there's nothing that anyone does in the industrial world that hasn't been at least indirectly touched by Apple that we do on a daily basis.
Yeah. I can look around the studio here and all of the things where I'm seeing an Apple touch that aren't directly related to technology. Yeah, it's interesting.
And all because Steve Wozniak had the audacity to think that he could design a computer by himself, and Steve Jobs had the audacity to think that he could sell it.
Yeah, and here we are podcasting today.
Yep. You know, and there's iTunes. There's you know, would Napster have that? I will say categorically, Napster would not have existed without the timeline of the personal computer, because the Napster utterly depended upon the personal computer and the internet.
Yep, you're right. You're right.
So Napster wouldn't have come along to shake up the music industry. iTunes wouldn't have come along to save the industry, despite that industry's every effort. We clearly would not have app stores as a place to buy mobile applications, because we wouldn't have smartphones.
No, we'd probably be carrying around portable CD players.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you're right.
Because
yeah,
if we didn't have the personal computer industry and the idea of being able to digitize audio onto portable devices, relatively speaking, like a computer, why would the recording industry have gone so far as to deal with downloadable music in some form?
Right. Well, yeah, they wouldn't have. Nor would some other medium have already come along, because CDs are still, by and large, the medium of physical music today.
Sure.
And we certainly wouldn't have progressed past the CD yet.
Right. And from the music industry standpoint, what a great format, because they can give you reasonably good audio quality and you can't easily steal it, right, from their perspective.
Right. Right. It's a scary world indeed.
Yeah, I don't like that world. I
don't like it either.
I much prefer the world we ended up with.
Yeah, I do too. Well, why don't you take us out?
Oh, right. Okay.
I don't have any of that in front of me, so we're going to have to wing it.
That's okay. I remember what I'm supposed to say. Okay, everyone, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sending your comments and feedback. And you can feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/TiveOBrien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, although I don't think they'll want to claim today's show. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Thanks for joining us for our 2011 Halloween special podcast.
Well, that was a waste of time.
Yeah. What in our name are we supposed to do with this quantum transdimensional pan notification visualizer?
Well, we could try and recycle it at an Apple store.